AG1 is a comprehensive and convenient blend of over 70 high quality ingredients. And what that means is each morning when I wake up, before I do anything else, I drink AG1 to set me up for the day. It keeps me clear headed, full of energy and focused on whatever I need to do, like writing the fighting cock, for example. One scoop once a day before breakfast and that's it. I've actually found that I've not been needing coffee in the morning to get me started. I've still been drinking coffee because I love coffee, but it's not because it's like a necessity to do so. AG1 is made out of the highest quality ingredients subject to the strictest manufacturing standards. AG1 is NSF certified for sport, and this process involves exhaustive testing and verification that every serving of AG1 is exactly what you see on the label. If you want to take ownership of your health, try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of vitamin D and 5 free AG1 travel packs for your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/thefightingcock. That's drinkag1.com/thefightingcock to get started. And to help the podcast. Thank you very much. Have a great day and enjoy the show.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and GEICO is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to GEICO.com or contact your local agent today.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and GEICO is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to GEICO.com or contact your local agent today.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It's the fighting. It's the fighting.
Clock.
It's the fighting. It's the fighting.
Clock.
A camel turner.
Boys, I was just thinking, I was looking at you guys, and we're recording over Zoom. We've got mics with, you know, mic arms, and we're recording remotely, and we're looking at each other's faces, and I'm sounding pretty much like a boomer right now. But do you remember when we first started recording the podcast? It was in this pub. T, you wasn't around. You came around about a month later. But
yeah.
But we were in this pub, and there was eight of us, I think, Rick. You remember it? Huddled around this little microphone in the middle of a table.
Yeah. I do remember it.
Now look at us. Do you remember when we was the part, if you go back to the first episode, if anyone can even find it, I wouldn't even know how to listen to it right now because it was 12 years ago. and thousands of episodes, well, not thousands, I'd say maybe 800, 900 episodes later, which is mad. 900 episodes later, and millions of downloads. Millions, Ricky. Since we were in that pub in Crouch End. Do you remember the name of the pub? Alexandra, weren't it? We're in that pub and we were sitting around that mic. My brother was on his laptop recording us, and we were just sitting there not quite knowing what to do. I was shit in my pants. And then we were saying, like, why are we using the names we use? Like, Flavor, my nickname, and Spooky, because fuck knows why he's called Spooky. And Jack, who was involved right at the beginning, I'm to Trunk. And then she went to you, Rick, and you went, what's your nickname? Ricky.
I also remember during the first edits, because we were recording in the pub was playing background music.
Yeah.
So when you were cutting, or when we were cutting to conversations, you'd hear one song and then it would cut to someone else and it'd be a totally different song.
Rick, we would cut out, me and Alex, my little brother Alex, we would sit, when we first, I'd say the first six or seven episodes, we'd sit down and take out every out of the conversation. Anytime someone went, like that, we'd edit it out. We'd sit through it. It'd take fucking ages. Afterwards, I said, Alex, if this is what's going to not stop us from being successful, I could give a fuck. I'm not doing this. I'm not sitting here with you for 3 hours every week cutting out from a conversation. But anyway, somehow we got to where we are right now, which is just three heterosexual blokes about to talk about football.
Lovely.
I mean, it wouldn't matter either way. I mean, I understand. Doesn't matter if it's heterosexual or not. She probably shouldn't have mentioned it. Doesn't matter. On the podcast this week. Actually, this is the first time in season 12, and it's only been two episodes, that we're joined by the wonderful Richard and Felonious Filth. How are you doing, boys?
Yeah, my name's Ricky.
Good. Your name isn't Ricky. No one's called Ricky. You're called Richard, and then
you always used to say this back in the day.
You hate it.
My name is Ricky. It's not fucking passport. It's someone's birth certificate. Yeah, there is no shortened down. It is Ricky, and you're like, are you sure it's not Richard? I'm like, I fucking know my name.
I know my name.
I remember as well. You were set up. Back in the day, you set up my computer. Yeah. And you ran all the software and did everything. I was like, oh, lovely, nice one, mate. And every time when I logged into my computer, everything was called Richard or Richard the Third. And every day I was reminded, and I couldn't change it, of just you calling me Richard. I said, you fucking bastard.
You hate it. There's a few more as well, but we won't go into it because it's potentially problematic. Anyway, nothing too problematic. It's not like out. Forget it. So lots coming up on this episode, predictions for the season, the Roma game, Conte's comments on the squad, and more importantly, his future, which is going to be very exciting because if he's being true to what he says, this could be long term. Anyway, we're going to talk about it. And we're going to be answering questions. But before that, there's this. Ricky, you like a good masturbation, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
There's no shame in mentioning that, is there, Rick?
No, everyone does it. Everyone does do it. Although they probably don't discuss it while on a podcast, being listened to by thousands of people. But yes, we do.
Tens of thousands.
That's fine. Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah.
Yeah, we all like it. I mean, you like it. We all like it. It's not a problem. We're not all completely naked when we do it. Like you are, Rick. I remember the time you told me the story about where you was on your bed and you just used your shoulders to hang off the edge of your bed and arched your body around so your feet were flat on the floor and there was just a naked Ricky with his thing jutting up into the air.
That's not true, but I've probably tried that at one point. In my horny teens or something.
We get to a point in of our age where we have to up the ante and the things that we're watching in order to get to the point where we can get our release. I think that's fair to say. The sites we use, though, are rife with hackers and people trying to get your information. So if you use NordVPN, they've got military-grade security. Like, this is the kind of security that would stop Russia from getting into your computer. So if it can stop Russia, they can definitely stop hackers when you're using
that's quite that's quite useful, because you know, if you get those pop-ups and you know you're trying to click away from the screen and someone walks in your room and you click on one of those I don't know, horny females in Greenford, and then your computer gets hacked, that can fuck your shit up. So
yeah,
now this shit's important.
Use NordVPN. But probably more pertinent to most of the people, actually not all of them do it as well, but most of the people listen to this, you know, Spurs are playing at 3 p.m. on Saturday and we're not on telly, and you can use NordVPN to access any channel across the world. Obviously, you need to subscribe to that particular package, but none of it's geo-locked. It won't stop you, because you're in the UK, from watching a 3 p.m. game that is broadcast in America. And there is a certain irony here, boys. And I'm somewhat frustrated that, you know, you're a fan and, you know, broadcasts in England, because of restrictions and laws that exist that cannot be moved about and shifted, the 3 p.m. games aren't seen, but anybody else in the world, they can see them. I don't know, do you find that frustrating, Ricky, that, you know, the Premier League is an English, you know, product. It's the game that is played in our country, but everywhere else in the world can watch the 3 p.m. games and we can't. Does that bother you at all?
Yeah, of course it does. Like, I don't understand why I... Like, is it a match of the day hoarding? Like, why can I not watch it?
I just want to watch it. The times have changed significantly, but it was fundamentally about protecting the local games and local clubs. So if you know, before things were broadcast and football was so popular, they thought that if you were broadcasting 3 p.m. well, any football back then, and you know, Man United were playing, that kids would be and adults would be less inclined to go to visit their or watch their local football team, and therefore, you know, deny them the lifeblood of their club, because there was a time where the matchday going fan was the lifeblood of these football clubs, and they would they were worried that people wouldn't turn up, that they'd rather watch Man United or Tottenham on the telly than going to watch Burnley or whoever it might have been. So it was a way of safeguarding, you know, the football and the local clubs back then. But things have changed so much. You can watch it anyways. It's stupid, because you can stream. You can use NordVPN to watch these games. The times change now, so that, you know, what was a pretty noble and honest way to go about things, to prevent sort of the commercialization of the game, the ship has soured. So I think we have to get to a point where we move forward. And anyway, I mean, it remains that the 3 p.m. blackout is consistent and it exists. And while it's probably time it was lifted, it hasn't been. And this season and many that will follow means that the fans in England won't be able to watch 3 p.m. games. But you can use NordVPN to access, you know, standard broadcasts from other countries. And,
I think the COVID situation, when we was all at home anyway, I don't think it made much of a dent. You know, obviously there are clubs going to the wall anyway, but the biggest clubs in the country are still, you know, still supported by almost everyone anyway. You've got Man United shirts probably in every major city in this country, even the little villages. So get rid of that rule, bin it.
There was a kid in a Man City full kit.
I'm seeing more of those.
In Devizes, where I live. I wanted to kick him in his head. I'll be honest.
You've got to fight your sons, people.
I would have front kicked him. Because who's bringing that kid up? Who's telling him what's right and wrong? But yeah, I mean, there's going to be more of that. But, you know, the fact is, you've just got to go over the times and you can do it. So, yeah, like I say, use NordVPN to access broadcasts from other parts of the world, and you can watch your 3 p.m. football without having to worry about streams buffering and all that kind of stuff.
On a separate note as well, funnily, I was on Instagram yesterday, saw a video I liked, clicked the link, and it was about a documentary that's been made. And I was like, yes, I want to watch a bit of this documentary. And I clicked on it, and it said Amazon are available on Amazon Prime. I was like, yes, please. Clicked on it, only available in the States.
VPN,
well annoyed.
Then
I went to, another site as well, and it said only available in America. Can I use this to watch that documentary?
Yeah, of course you can, mate. Of course.
Yes,
absolutely. It opens up the internet, the world's internet, to you, and that's cost of a cup of coffee every single month. And yeah. So, yeah, if you want to join up, you can grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/thefightingcock. You get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan, plus one additional month free. It's completely risk-free, and you get a 30-day money-back guarantee. Also, obviously, we're in the middle of a cost-of-living crisis, and you know how expensive streaming services are. You can go to different parts of the world through your NordVPN and pick up the prices that people in Argentina pay or people in Vietnam pay, and save money doing that, basically. Netflix is £11 a month. Why not pay £1 a month in a different part of the world? You do that through NordVPN. Very easy. It's going to save you loads of money. Imagine if you actually took all of your different streaming accounts and different things that you use and use NordVPN to go to Argentina, say, and pay 10% of the cost you pay currently. You'd be saving huge amounts of money. Anyway, let's get on to the football. What are your thoughts overall on the Roma game, Rick?
I thought it was a good run out for the lads. I think it looked fucking hot, didn't it? It looked well hot.
Yes,
a lot of the players, the tops looked absolutely soaked. So it was a real good run out, good test against the Roma side that, you know how Mourinho plays, and he plays kind of the low block, men behind the ball, breaking quickly. And you know Tottenham in the past have come across teams like that, and we found it very hard to break them down. So it's good to kind of reintroduce that style of football that we're going to be up against, and to see as a test how creative we are, how we progress the ball forward, what we do in certain situations. And the intensity as well. It wasn't just a run-of-the-mill friendly. I think, obviously, again, Mourinho's team, bit of needle to it as well. So I think all our friendlies have been really good. But I have to say, I know it's a friendly. Disappointed we lost. Always disappointed we lost. I'm always disappointed. But, I mean, like I said, it was for fitness reasons, and playing in that that intensity and that heat, it was good. Hopefully, it's not too fucking sapping for our players. But
in terms of cardio, it's perfect. I mean, it would have been a massive drain in their system. It's a week to the next game. I think if anything, that improves their levels going into it.
Yeah, it was good to see a couple of the players give more minutes under their belt as well. But overall, yeah, I can't really. There wasn't anything where I'm like that has particularly stood out for me in the game.
What about you? See anything? I mean, we're not going to dig into the nuances of the game, because it's pointless, really. But any takeaways from what you saw?
No, not a great deal. I mean, Ricky covered it a lot. Mourinho's team, once they go ahead, they're very difficult to break down. We might discuss James Maddison, us maybe being in for him. Something like that might have been nice to kind of unlock Roma a little bit. But I think it's just a case of getting everyone minutes under their belt. Didn't understand why Spence didn't get a run out. I think he's one of the few players who didn't last Saturday. But I just wanted pre-season out of the way. I don't take much interest in it. I don't really watch the games and take them in as such. We got through it. No one else got injured, touch wood. And we move on to Southampton on Saturday.
As fans, we've been burnt by pre-seasons. We've learnt that it means nothing. we knew.
I know what game you're going to refer to, Flav.
It'd be the
same opposition.
Yeah, it'd be the five beating Roma 5-0, and you know what happened after that. And not to say
I was so hyped.
Oh, man, we all were, and that was why I've got to say that period was the lowest I've ever felt. Do you remember, Rick? I mean, we've told this story loads of times, Rick, but when Hull beat us, who's the guy who took the free kicks? Scored against Arsenal, but Giovanni.
Yeah, Giovanni, yeah.
And we made a pact to do something stupid if Hull beat us at home, and they did. It was just terrible. It was just the worst time. I think we drew at Wigan at home. We drew at Borough away. No, lost to Borough away. I mean, it was terrible, and that was off the back of such an exciting, optimistic Spurs. Like, we got one day Ramos. Look at the way Sevilla played Spurs off the park, and then it came to Tottenham, and then we somehow infected him with our shitness, and we were pants. To be fair, he hasn't done much since then, but yeah, pre-season is pre-season. Practice. What is it? Was it Iverson said, practice is practice.
Team, I think that's him, yeah.
Yeah, just practice.
The NBA
there's
guy.
There's a difference between the Premier League and than the actual football. But yeah, than the pre-season. And Arsenal fans getting so hyped. It's like winning the league type hyped. I think when it all kicks into gear that they may have to reserve their optimism somewhat.
You know at the start of every season they're top of the league because they're alphabetically top, right?
Right,
they're probably going to be screaming stop the count like Trump did, because that's the only time they're going to be top of the league, mate.
Yeah. I mean, no, I feel like there's zero chance.
But, I don't think they start top this season.
AFC Bournemouth.
Yeah.
Well, they take second.
AFC Bournemouth, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Indeed.
I see you. I did wonder why Bournemouth are top when I saw my screenshot of the league table.
As you brought it up, Flav, I do want to chat about that. Not about their result, their obviously optimism. I had a gooner mate round at the weekend as the game was being played, and he said, "Oh, how Arsenal playing Seville. I'll check on the score." And it's like 4-0 after 20 minutes. I was like, fuck's sake. and he's like, yeah, you know, Arsenal Spurs, definitely third, fourth place, that, you know, one of us will be a sneaky surprise that, you know, could potentially win the league. And I'm like, not really. and it's just...
Spurs are not a sneaky surprise. One of the best managers in world football and a squad that is legitimately, you know, good. We're not a sneaky surprise. Arsenal will be a sneaky surprise, despite spending £230 million more than they've recouped in three transfer windows. It's madness what's going on at Arsenal. If they don't challenge for the league based on what they've spent, because they can't sustain that. If they don't challenge for the league, because Arsenal fans, I think, Ricky, I appreciate I've just jumped all over what you were about to say, but sorry, and we'll come back to it. But Arsenal fans believe that. That I think this is what Arsenal are now, where they just keep spending and spending and spending. They've behaved in a similar way that Man City and Chelsea did previously, where they were able to spend £200 million in a calendar year without recouping anything, and think that's going to be normal. It cannot be normal, because the restrictions on spending exist, and they are significant. Look at what Everton are doing. Everton can't buy players right now. It's impossible for them to buy players because they're so close to that Premier League rule. If Arsenal didn't get into the Champions League, which gives them such a difficult task going forward, they've basically punted loads of money into Arteta and Arsenal. If it doesn't work this season, and I think they'll have a better season than they did last season, but if it doesn't work, they are going to struggle. They'll have to start balancing the books at some point. Sorry, Rick, what was you going to say?
I can't remember now.
Sorry.
I think it was basically, you know, him come round gloating of how well they're doing. And it kind of made me think that when against Rangers in the first half, we had a starting 11 that resembled our starting 11 from last season. Same against Roma as well, and now we've lost to against Roma, and they've had that resounding victory. It has made me think, like, have we changed? We've made six signings, and like throughout this fucking pre-season, I'm like, sign six players, doesn't matter that no one goes straight into the first team. Five substitutions now. We're in four competitions. We need that squad depth. And when someone comes in, it can't be a kid anymore. It's got to be someone with experience. But it did make me think that we haven't really changed the starting 11 a lot. lot from last season, but again, it's who's going to the players that we have bought. I think maybe in the middle of the season or even the first quarter, you probably will see Bissouma starting instead of Højbjerg, or you probably will see Perisic instead of Sess, or I never know how to pronounce his name. Longley instead of Ben.
We had a question we're going to do to the end of towards the end of the podcast, but Sam R says, did the early activity in the transfer window compared to with the relatively quiet recent period of inactivity trigger this utter bollocks about us having an underwhelming summer of trading, or is there something in it, T?
Well, Vicky keeps stealing my points, but I think the squad has been massively improved. The starting 11, maybe not so much, but you'd look at, I'm not going to go forward, I'm going to forget someone, knowing me, but Richarlison is considerably better than Bergwijn, for example, in terms of being suited for the Premier League.
Yes.
Longley is better than Rodon. Bissouma is better than Winks, and so on and so on. So
Forster's better than Gallini.
Yeah. So, normally, you guys know that when the lineup is announced, there's normally someone I hate in the 18 or the 20, whatever it is now. That name ain't going to be there now because there's better players there. Harry Winks ain't going to darken our squad again, so I'm not going to be angry anymore. But
what about if Lucas Moura plays right wing back?
Oh, you know what, man? I don't know if we were asked about that, but that can't happen. That just can't happen. I mean, no,
Conte
absolutely
likes him.
Not.
Conte
but
likes him.
But to be fair, Conte likes him, and I can see why Conte likes him because he. I'm not going to say he follows instruction. He's a bit of a headless chicken, but he doesn't complain. He keeps his head down and works very hard. But I feel that this transfer window has shown that if we can get... I keep thinking the window shuts before the Southampton game, but it doesn't, does it? It shuts at August 31st. So we've got plenty of time to get rid of players. I think we probably still need maybe two or three, but overall... So we're gone.
Well, I'm just saying that the final piece of this transfer window seems to be an attacking midfielder or someone that can unlock a defence. And Madison's been linked previously, but Zaniolo is the one that's been it's been talked about significantly over the last 2 weeks. So we're looking for that. And if you have one more that does it, and I in my head I can't see where he fits in or when he's going to play or how often he's going to play, but if it's an option and Spurs are going to get him on loan for a year with an option to buy, then it's a fucking outstanding window.
I feel that the World Cup is going to make this a very, very strange season, much like the COVID season is very strange. There were no fans.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be going to be a lot of anomalies. That's probably why Arsenal fans are optimistic, because I feel that the World Cup is going to really shaft this season, and I think that it's going to be a couple of freak results in there. But I feel that we've kind of prepared for that with buying all these players and improving our squad overall. But it would be nice to have a couple of players who we know are going to start. The players we've bought so far, I think maybe Bissouma's probably one where Bissouma's had COVID. So once he's over the effects of that, you would think he'd start. I don't think the rest of the players that we've bought are necessarily going to walk straight in.
Perisic starts.
Perisic and Doherty... You mentioned in the running order, not to spoil, but Perisic and Doherty are coming off long-term injuries, so they're still kind of playing their way back to full fitness. And obviously, when they're fully fit, you would think Perisic should maybe be the leader. But for now, the place is Sessegnon's and Royale.
Conte mentioned that, didn't he, in his post-match, saying about that. I read it this morning. It's like paraphrasing, but it was something like how Perisic is playing and training is not the Perisic that he knows.
Yeah, I've got it here. Conte said that Perisic needs to work hard because he's not the player he knew at Inter, but he said he was happy that he's taken a healthy amount of time to recover from the injury he had. But he knows that Perisic is going to be better than what he's seen. Rick, sorry, Karen.
Do you think it's that little bit of... subtle,
But gamesmanship.
Psychology.
Yeah, exactly. Saying, oh, it's better than, obviously, I knew him, how he played, and I'm thankful that he's had that extended break for his injury, as to say, you've had a nice rest, fucking pull your socks up, lad, let's get going.
I think they're part of that, yeah. But I think he's saying that this is, what you're seeing isn't Perisic. He needs to work more, he's going to work more, and you know, he's probably protecting the player somewhat, but he's also, there's a psychological element to it where he's saying, Perisic, you need to make sure you're ready. And it's fine. There's no issue there, I don't think, Rick.
No, and Doherty as well, he was saying that, I think he said that he struggled at the beginning. Oh, obviously, we all said that. And then
I've got that quote as well.
Let's go.
Sorry. It was the same with Matthew for Doherty. I hope to see him like last season, and now he's working and he's struggling. We need to have patience. We need to give time for these players to be really fit. It will be very important for us, but we have Sessegnon, that is a guarantee. Also, Emerson is good. There is a new player, Spence. He is a guy who has to work a lot because to go into Tottenham is very different in the Premier League with Tottenham, Butty. In the end, I'm very happy. I'm happy because we finished the pre-season. We want to start the new season. We have important games to get 3 points.
For me, I don't know how you guys feel about it. Maybe it might be because I'm a beta, not an alpha. Yeah. But if you were to read a half-year review or a full-year review or something about yourself, and they said, T, your work's good, but you've been struggling. Oh, God, fuck, that's a dagger to my heart. If someone was saying, they're reviewing my work and said I was struggling, I would that would really hurt me.
But then he knows. These are elite performers.
I don't care who they are. They have emotions. Yeah,
but they need to be elite performers. You put that to the back. You get on with it.
I can't.
But that's why you're not Premier League footballer, Ricky.
Yeah, but Flav, you got
you had the talent, Rick.
You had the talent.
You had the talent. You didn't have the mentality. That was your problem.
But Flav, you got to think that if you drove your car and if Lewis Hamilton drove your car, there'd be different results. So essentially, the manager knows
you
need to kick up the arse and who might need a bit of an arm around the shoulder. So I believe he probably did that knowing that it will G these players up. Because there's some players who he doesn't really go after, even if they're a little bit below par. He's never been, for example, he's not savage. I mean, Joe Roden's just gone out to Rennes, but he's never been brutal about his performances, even though they were fairly bad. And even the Romero, I mean, he's said some comments about him, like, you need to have, is it a cold heart or hot head or hot head, whatever the fuck, man. I've got it all mixed up.
Was it a cold head and a hot heart?
That's what he said. So he says these things knowing the players well enough now. He's had enough time with them to know what makes them tick. So it's not one of those where he's caning all 23 players in our squad, whatever much it is. He sends these messages out knowing them well enough psychologically. I hope so anyway. If I'm wrong, then I've got to go with Ricky. You would hope he's saying this in the knowledge that this will G them up.
I just had a little giggle then, because I just had a flashback to when you mentioned Romero clearing that Roma player out.
I love him so much. He's a maniac. I mean, he's also top draw. Like, he's quality. And I think that we can think about Romero in the same way that we think about Alderweireld, Vertonghen, Ledley King, and other, like Gary Mabbott. You know,
Mike England.
Yeah. And Mike England as well. He's that level. He's that level. Like Dyer should be in our team because of who he is and his mentality and how he handles himself, and the fact that under Jose Mourinho and Conte he's been very good. I think very good is a way to describe. But Eric Dyer is in the best form since he joined the club. But he's not Romero and he's not Alderweireld and he's not Ledley King, he's not Vertonghen. Romero is something else. He's like, and if he stays with us and we win trophies, he has the potential to be top of the tree. But you can't remove the way he plays from what goes on in his head. He gets into and goes through players because all he wants to do is win that ball. And we've seen multiple times last season where he's won the ball and we've broke away and created really dangerous opportunities. And often, when he's really committed, sort of score goals. But there's been other times against Manchester United where he got done by, I mean, do you remember we lost 3-2? And yeah. Fred did a little flick and Ronaldo was flicking around him and it didn't work for him. But by and large, I was 18% of the time, he's going to do the right thing and achieve. But he is a walking Ricard, but you just have to accept it. You have to accept
there was
it.
There was a comment I saw in an article, I don't know if it's the same one that you picked up, Flav, that I think it was 2 yellows off getting a suspension and he never got booked again for the entire season. So
Conte is either lucky or he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, but Conte sends his messages out knowing that, you know what, I'm giving you, you got your dog on a lead, you're giving them enough lead to, you know, for what they can cope with. And I feel that Conte knows the other personalities within the squad. Because, for example, he was never, ever hard on Sessegnon. And Sessegnon is someone who, I can't say he's weak mentally because he's an elite athlete, and I can't say that bad. But someone like Sessegnon, if Conte said, oh, he's been poor, it would probably break him. So he's always been very effusive in his praise for Sessegnon. So I feel that Conte psychologically knows the players now, and their messages are ones that he knows that they will take on board and build.
Yeah, for sure. We had a question. We're answering the question sections early because it's just pertinent to what we're talking about. But Dan, Stain Spurs, he says, we're yet to see Romero play against the scum under Conte. How much are you looking forward to this, Rick?
Just like you just said, to hark back to he's a walking red card. I just like, you just know he's going to be like a bull seeing those red shirts and just go fucking flying through him. But then what T just said as well, about he had like 2 yellow cards until the rest of the season and he didn't pick one up. So he does have it. He does have it in him, but there is that rush of blood to the head that, does worry me. And I do like, there's been a couple
one-on-one
battles he's had with people. And he's just completely either out-muscled them, beat them to every ball, and then they just don't want to know. And I'm looking forward to him doing that against a few bods and a few. It's going to be interesting, him against players like Haaland, and then obviously for the Gooner game against Gabriel. But yeah,
Do you reckon Jesus is up for being snapped?
One rake to the back of his calf and he won't be going anywhere.
It's all very pretty and they've bought sort of tiny little footballers who are technically good. And that's all well and good. It really is. That's what Guardiola would have done at Man City, but they're not Man City and he's not Guardiola.
Hey, Flav, do you remember the story of when Tyson fought Tyrell Biggs, right? And I think Tyrell Biggs was crying during the fight because of all the body shots that Tyson has thrown at him. That's going to be Jesus when just to get a little rakes in the ankles, like when the referee's not looking. That's going to be Jesus, man. And I know Ricky slips in a little Coldplay reference, a little rush of blood to the head. I see you, Ricky. But I feel that Romero against Arsenal would be like Charlie Nicholas and Graham Roberts. They're going to reenact that iconic image.
Get in the fucking stands.
Yes.
Get in the stands. You don't belong on this pitch. You're fucking in the stands.
And you let it go to the dog. I can say it now.
Saka getting fucking flung up in the air. One tackle and he's bouncing. He's 10 feet in the air. Comes down.
There you go. Back.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Another interesting week for Conte in these press conferences. Talking about his future, he told Football London, Alistair Gold, that he expects zero problems in continuing as Spurs boss for the long term if the club continues on its current path and he wants Harry Kane to join him. He also said, for sure, we want to continue to improve, to build something important for this club. If the idea continues to be in this way, there will be zero problems to continue my life in Tottenham because I stay well and I like this group of players and I have a good relationship with Paratici and Daniel Levy. Music to our ears. You know what's great? The greatest thing about that comment is it puts pressure on Daniel Levy, specifically Paratici as well, but puts pressure on Daniel Levy to keep him happy. He's saying fundamentally, you remember during the first 6 months of his tenure at Tottenham, He was talking about it was completely non-committal. Like, well, all of us were worried about whether or not he would even stay for next season, let alone go into the seasons that follow. And we've done enough this summer, clearly placated him in what we wanted to do in the transfer window, for him to now say, I want to be here for years. And do you know what it is, Rick? I wonder what you think about this, is that sometimes it takes the perfect situation for someone to settle down. It could be a bloke. I'm sure you're a bit like this, Rick. You're just flinging your dick around. Just whatever's going, yeah, I'll put it in that. That's fine. That's what's that? What's that down there? Is that? Yeah, all right, I'll put it in that as well. But eventually someone comes along and you think, I'm sick of putting it in that. I want to put it in the same thing forever. I don't know why you do say these things. What I'm saying is that maybe Tottenham and Conte, and I should say, when I say put it in that, I wasn't talking about women. I was talking about anything, Rick.
Yeah.
Anybody and everything. But yeah, maybe this is the perfect storm for Tottenham and Conte. And, you know, while he's not on a long-term contract, he said himself that contracts aren't significant to him, but the situation is significant to him. And he, you know, if things are correct, then he will stay. It doesn't mean anything if he doesn't have, you know, a four-year contract. Guardiola is on a rolling contract at Man City. That's how big clubs do things, if you serve the manager in a way that we are serving Conte. What did you make of those comments, Rick?
Disappointing, really. Hated it. Disgusting. Obviously, it was great to hear. And the thing is as well, like, I'm sure there are loads of different things where Conte will go into a club and he'll be measuring on how much control he has. I mean, you hear from the players about the detail in training, about dietary, about everything, really. From that, there's been lots written about from when he first came into the corridors of Hotspur Way and what he's been doing and how he's been changing things. And yeah, there is the obvious of, okay, we've got to our first summer with Conte, and he says he wants, I don't know, he was saying like 6 or 7 players or something, and he wants them in at the beginning of pre-season so he can work with his players on their fitness and how we're going to be playing the upcoming season. And, you know, we've signed 6 players and they all came very quickly, so he's had a lot of time to work with them. But I'm sure it's not just that. That's not the thing. Oh, right, I've ticked that off. Yeah, that's it. Definitely signed forever now. I reckon he's changed a lot of things around Tottenham, and it's about how much resistance that you have about the way you want to do things, the way you want to conduct yourself and your players want to conduct themselves and all these different things. And I just think it's kind of been like, you know, here's the keys. Here's the keys to the house. You use it as however you want. There are no rules. You make the rules. And I think he's just kind of like, just got on and done what he's wanted to do. There are still some kind of quotes or noises that I'm just a bit like, so for the Spence deal, and he was saying, you know, it was a club sign-in, and it wasn't his actual sign-in, but he did give the green light for it. There are still a couple of, I don't know whether it's kind of misinterpretation or if he says these things because he wants the press to spin it this way or whatever it might be. But I think, like, when he was at Chelsea and other clubs as well, he's had a lot of pressure. And I do think he has a lot of, you know, people feel like they have to try and control him and put like almost a leash around him because he is that temperamental. But I think this time at Tottenham, he has just been given the run of the mill. And I think he's realizing that he's actually like, do you know what? This is actually fucking great, it's Randy. Right, the players that he's got.
Randy.
It's all right. No, I can wear my trainers in the ass and put them on the table. No one's going to fucking tell me, Jack.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you, Rick, like an important question. But if he bummed your mum, would you be all right with that?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Really?
So fill your boots. I'd say fill your boots.
Fill your boots with my mum's bum.
Yeah, exactly.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Felonious. We've got a question here from Steve Bunyan. He says, let's have your top seven predictions in order. Let's all do this together, boys.
Oh, God.
Let's do it together. Yeah. So, seventh. I'm thinking Newcastle, seventh.
Yeah, Newcastle seventh.
Yeah, go on then.
Yeah,
I don't think West Ham will be as good as they were last season. They're not spent, so I think Newcastle will take that place. But West Ham seventh? I don't know.
Well, so Newcastle have bought Botman, defender on the left hand side, and he's quality.
But in West Ham, Scamacca, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
They've bought him, but. What are you saying? But West Ham or Newcastle? They're after who's the other kid? We were linked with him earlier. Kostic, left wing back.
Yes.
Quality
guy.
Yeah.
Quality
yeah.
as well. He is quality. But will they be able to do enough? So we could say that. We see a West Ham seventh over Newcastle.
I think Newcastle seventh with them. I think they're looking at Madison and I'm not confident that we can outbid Newcastle, but we've got Champions League football. So if we put in a reasonable bid, it's got to be 50 now because I think they've got a 45 million bid rejected. But I think Newcastle 7th isn't a bad shout. Does that give them Conference League?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right,
Newcastle 7th.
Let's agree with Newcastle and then we get to top six. So who's going to finish 6th, Rick?
West Ham.
West Ham. We just said yeah. that. So what? So who? So if Newcastle finish seventh and West Ham are finishing sixth, who out of the top six are not going to finish eighth?
Shit, Man United. Too many good teams. No.
The realization.
It's not West Ham. Yeah. It ain't West Ham. But we could. West Ham or Newcastle are seventh. But the top six are going to comprise of Liverpool, Spurs, Arsenal, Chelsea, Man United, and.
No, there's too many good teams.
Okay, so if you can accept the fact that the top six will be what it was last year, out of those big teams, who are going to finish sixth? Is it Man United? Is it Arsenal? Is it Chelsea? If it isn't Spurs, obviously, then it's got to be one of them. I think Arsenal probably, they're in a position where they're not going to finish, they're not going to be the worst out of the top six. I think it's Chelsea. I do.
Yeah.
They're a long way.
It sounds a bit weird.
Sounds a bit odd, but they're a long way off where they need to be, given the fact that the squad isn't complete. They don't have time to be everything they need to be in order to finish in the top four if they start the season without their entire squad. Their squad's mad. It's so top heavy. They signed one defender in Koulibaly who has been in Italy and, you understand that he's a good player and people want him, but he's 31. I don't know. I'm not...
There's rumours as well. Barca want to take more of their defenders.
Well, as Pelicueta's apparently going to Barca.
I thought he'd gone already. I'm surprised at that.
I don't know if Barca are doing it, to be honest. Like, it's fucking mental over there. All right, let's agree Chelsea. And then you've got sixth. Is it Arsenal or is it Man United who finished fifth?
I'm going to say Man U fifth.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
I'll say Man United fourth just because it isn't Arsenal. But I think deep down, I feel like Arsenal probably will squeeze in fourth ahead of...
I agree with you there, Flav. I mean, I don't want to give Arsenal any praise. And to be fair... They were on course to get fourth without Europe, and Arteta made very bad decisions in that January window. I think he loaned out Maitland-Niles and a couple of other and Saliba and whatnot. Not even in the January window. So
before
talk about the same manager making bad decisions.
Remember,
so I'll put Arsenal fifth.
I put Arsenal fifth and Man United fourth. And the reason I do that is because Arteta had an entire season last year with one game a week, pretty much. One game a week. I mean, you know how much of an advantage that is to have one game a week. It's mad. It's like if you could just play one game a week, like there'd be an argument. And it's difficult to make the argument because managers like Conte won't stand being a manager of a football club that finishes eighth. But if you finish eighth and you are the size of Tottenham or Arsenal or Chelsea and you only have to play one game a week, your chances of finishing having a really good domestic season is dramatically improved. Arsenal have Europa League football. And as much as it's been derided in the past, we've seen that it's a difficult competition to win. So Arsenal will all have to deal with that, and the cup games, and also I can just hear Arteta's weird little robotic whining voice. You know, if you think they bottled a fucking North London derby in the middle of a season where they were only playing one game a week because they had one case of COVID and they'd fucked up by loaning loads of players out and got injuries and stuff. What are they going to do when they actually have to do what other big teams have done, which actually cope with European football? So
they got knocked out of Europe. They got knocked out of both cups early as well. On top of all that, so
yeah,
I think they might finish fifth because they don't deal with adversity very well. I mean, you know, you talked about they spent all this excess money. They've got all these lovely kits, so maybe that'll make up the shortfall of all this transfer excessive spending that they've been doing. But I feel that them being in Europe, and they probably may go deep in the cups than last year. We'll see how good their squad is because Conte was, I think Chelsea won in Europe and Conte took over Chelsea and they won the league.
Indeed.
And you've got to be expecting for any of the big six to not be in Europe, they have to, at the absolute minimum, be getting top four. And he couldn't even do that. Same manager. So
top three, Man City, Liverpool or Tottenham, which is mad to say that we're going into a season and it's not like Pochettino where we shocked the Premier League and we shocked British football by being brilliant. This is an expectation. It's a weird position to be in where you're comfortable, Rick, as a Spurs fan going into a game, into a season thinking, yeah, we could do something. So how significantly can we do something this year?
Well, it's, in my heart of hearts, you know, when you think with your heart and your head, I think we will probably finish third, but the gap between first, second and third will be a hell of a lot closer. And then the gulf between third and fourth will be massive. And I think the first, second, third will be fairly close all the way until the end. And then it will just be like a point between the first and second thing, and then a couple of points between first and third. It feels weird for me to be like, yeah, definitely going to win the league. We'll be so kind of that
conclusive.
Final about saying it. And yeah, we went close a couple of seasons back. But again, I'm still not used to saying that I think we're going to be title challengers. But again, like T said earlier, that it's a weird season. And again, you just don't know how Liverpool are going to cope without Mane and how well Nunes is going to adapt to Premier League life. You don't know, like with Chelsea, City, and Haaland, and how well he's going to adapt to Premier League life. I know I've said this fucking example loads of times, but Chelsea, when they signed Werner, and we all thought that Chelsea were going to romp the league, nothing happened. The same with Lukaku. But it's just an example of just because you have a missing piece and then you buy that from somewhere else, you think, oh, automatically going to win the league because you've signed that person for X amount of money. It doesn't always work like that. So those two teams could not struggle, but not hit the heights that you expect them. And then another team like Tottenham might outperform what you expect them to.
So where are we going to finish, Ricky?
Fucking top of the league, mate.
Come on! Come on! Yes! Why not? Why the fuck not? So and almost everybody who's listened to this who knows who Rory Jennings is will, absolutely hate his guts. But he is a mate of mine. And we were talking on the phone the other day and he said, what you need to realise is you have Antonio Conte. And Antonio Conte did for Chelsea that what no other manager who's come in has done. And which is transform Chelsea from 10th position to fucking Premier League title winners. And he does not know how to lose. And we haven't had a manager who doesn't know how to lose before. And I'm hanging my hat on that comment. I really am. So I'm going to say Spurs top. And it would, what a way to win it. If we could do it, what a way to win it against two teams as good as Man City and Liverpool. Bearing in mind, these are two teams that we didn't lose to last year. We beat Man City twice, done a double over one of the best teams that the Premier League has ever seen. Because of, part of that was down to Nuno. You've got to give him credit. We won that game somehow, but we did win it. And we went to Etihad with Conte, with his winner's mentality. And we beat them there. And fucking slapped Liverpool at home, somehow drew to all. But fucking, we could have won that 5-2. And then went to Anfield and should have won that as well. I think we should be optimistic. Anyway, that's our top seven. Who gives a fuck who finishes second or third? Liverpool, Man City, couldn't give a fuck. Lee Brown, sorry, he says, bravado aside, if you had to put up your something of value as stake, where will we achieve this season? So imagine if you had all the money in your bank account, bearing in mind we all have families, but you have to do it. You have to put that money down. What would be the best Spurs season or best finish in the Premier League that you'd be willing to put that money against? So bearing in mind you're going to lose everything that you've built up, everything for your family, but you have to put it on Spurs finishing on a certain league position. If we finish below it, you lose everything. If they get it, you keep what you've got. Where would you put Spurs? T.
Jesus Christ, that's a tough one, actually.
What would you be willing to sacrifice?
For the purpose of this podcast, I'm going to say third.
You wouldn't, though. That it's not about this. It's not about that.
Because yeah, but it's going to be a shitty podcast if I fucking say fourth, isn't it?
No,
but I'd be fucking vanilla.
Mate, I'm not sure I'm going to put fourth either. I'd say that if I wasn't going to lose everything that I have, realistically, I'd probably say eighth or seventh.
Oh, but no, we're not having that. I'd stay fifth.
But listen, it's not about what Spurs can do. It's about how much you're willing to gamble.
Yeah, but Flav, you need to believe in your ability to make money, though. So,
but you're not making anything here. You're just getting back what you've staked. So all the money you've put together for your son in his future, and you're saying, I'm going to put all this money in. I have to put all this money in, and Spurs have to finish above this position. What is that position?
Fifth.
Yeah, I mean, that's bold. I mean, if I like to lose everything you had, I'm fifth. Then, Rick, what are you saying?
It's a hypothetical, isn't it? I mean, if it was actually put in front of me, I probably would be like you and say eighth. But in this hypothetical, I'd be like,
imagine your missus's face, like, why don't you put 18th? Because you'd keep your money. Why is your ego saying fifth?
You guys have seen White Men Can't Jump, right?
Yeah,
of course.
Woody Harrelson's character is a massive gambler. I'd be like him. I'd be like Woody Ho. What the fuck's his name? Woody Ho in the film?
I'm not sure.
I know Billy Ho. That's it. Billy Ho in the film, right? I'd be like that shit. I'd be like fifth place because
I believe that you made a point about Rory saying Conte doesn't like to lose, doesn't know how to lose. And I feel that Spurs have missed that, because Pochettino in the Champions League final, I want to talk about this ad nauseum throughout the season to deal with it, but having all the entire squad take a picture before the game and, I don't know, if we win, I might leave, blah, blah, blah. Conte and any of that shit. Conte's like, we are here to do a fucking job. It's like burying a dead body. We're here to do a job, man. We're going to fucking do it regardless. And yeah, that's what Conte is. Yeah. I believe that Poch should be like, oh, but what if we get caught? You know, what if we get caught burying a dead body? Conte's like, fuck that. We're here to do a job. Cold-blooded. Do your shit. Boot. Spade. Sack to put the body in. Do
lime.
That shit.
Lime. Dissolve the body.
Exactly. Like Breaking
Cold-blooded.
Bad.
Cold-blooded.
Fair enough, Rick. What? Where would you place us if you're gonna avoid losing all of your life savings and the happiness of your kids? Where do we finish? What would you?
I would have done exactly what you said, seventh, eighth. But it doesn't make good podcasting, does it?
Exactly.
Yeah, but we love our kids. Okay, and what else we got? Dolphin, he says, what would Richarlison have to prove early on that would be deserving of him taking the starting spot away from Deki?
He ain't taking it from Deki.
He's not taking it from anyone.
It's a difficult one.
That's not what his job is. His job is why is it difficult?
Because the boring answer would just be score goals, get assists. Improve,
perform.
You know, make Kane and Son look good. I mean, that's essentially any third player's job. Kulusevski made Sonny and Kane look good while he played for them, and he took his chances when he got them. What I've got to bear in mind is that Kulusevski is narrowly older than Phil Foden, so he's still a child, he's still very young. Richarlison's been in the league for 3-4 seasons. Richarlison's got experience, so there's every chance he could take Kulusevski's but at points throughout the season. But it's a long season with the World Cup in the season as well. There's going to be a bit of back and forth, and it's inevitable it's going to be injuries. And what does he have to do? I just think it's a boring answer. Score goals, get assists. I mean, that's what Kulusevski did. When Kulusevski first joined, we weren't sure, and he proved us wrong.
I don't see him as a replacement for Kulusevski. Actually, I see him as a buffer to Son and Kane. That's what I think Richarlison's job is.
Isn't that what Kulusevski is to a degree?
Yeah, but Kulusevski plays on the right. Richarlison's never... I mean, since his days at Watford and Everton and for Brazil, he doesn't play on the right. So if that's the case, if that's what his role is, it's not having to rely on Son and Kane for an entire season. And if all of our hopes and dreams are tied up in their fitness... You have to have someone in who can play both roles. And Richarlison can play a number 9. He can play the left. He can play the 10. The reason why we spent £50 million on him is because he offers a solution to when Son and Kane need a break. We have never had a solution to that question. And having that as a backup, and by when I say backup, it's not to say he's not going to play. He's going to play lots. But what he offers by being available and effective when he comes on is a solution to the fact that Kane and Son can't play every minute of a season where we have Champions League football. If we're lined up against Barcelona or Bayern Munich in the group stages and we're playing Southampton 3 days before, you can think, well, let's play Richarlison in one of the roles, either it be Kane or Son's role. That's what you need to do to win stuff. You need to have a viable backup. And if that costs £50 million to give us that freedom to pick and choose when Son and Kane play, then it's £50 million well spent. And that's what a big club does. That's what Man City would do. That's what Liverpool would do. And that's what Tottenham are doing. So,
totally agree.
Could have said to you on the right.
I completely agree in that... There are times when we feel that we can't drop certain players because of the weaknesses in the squad. And I feel that with this window, we're at a stage where we don't feel as bad for resting players every now and then. Obviously, we're not going to rest Kane or Son if we can help it, but I feel that if any of the six signings came into the first 11 before or after a big Champions League game, that they would do a good job.
Yeah, indeed. And that's the thing, is it might not be before a Champions League game, it might be after as well. So, all right, we'll finish on this. We've got a question from Curran Chaniera. I feel like such a fucking dick when I'm pronouncing people's names, but there's so many confusing names around. Why isn't everyone called Sean or Dave?
You've got to do phonetics for that shit, man.
But why isn't everyone called Sean, Dave, Peter, Darren? I can deal with that. I can say that all day long. But I can't. What did Sheeran carry? Oh, it's hard. Anyway, would you rather Conte or Kane extend their contract? Who is better placed to build the team around?
Wow, that's a horrible question.
Yeah, there was a couple like that. There wasn't even just what it wasn't even just one. There was a couple, so we have to answer it. What when you say it's horrible? What's going through your head, Rick?
Well, I love Kane and I want him to stay forever, and I want him to stay at Tottenham and break the Premier League goal scoring record at Tottenham. I want him to win the league at Tottenham. I want him to win trophies at Tottenham. But then on the other hand, you've got, like you've said throughout the pod about how good Conte is. And if you can keep someone like Conte at your club and we can kind of answer his questions in the transfers, bringing in the players that he wants and running the club how he wants, and he's happy and he's content and he's motivated, Conte would stay at Tottenham longer than Kane's career would be, I think.
Yeah.
But saying Conte, I can't bring myself to say it, because even though I do feel like Kane is Tottenham through and through, and I know there was that, you know, the Man City thing. We all make mistakes, our eyes get turned, we think the grass is green on the other side, and I didn't forgive him for ages, and I was still quite bitter about that. And, you know, I had 95% love for him, but there was still that 5% that I was still a bit... But now I kind of have seen him in pre-season, and I feel healed. Do you know what I mean? I feel my love is whole for Kane again. I'm ready to get hurt.
Four years of Kane and 4 years of Conte. As good as Kane is, the manager is the be all and end all. You've seen lesser managers than Conte do greater things with less of a squad than Spurs have.
Oh, I know that, but I can't bring myself to say it.
Say it, you little pig.
no way. I'm going to... fucking hell. There's the bloody good question.
Well, the irony is that if Conte stays, Kane probably stays. That's where we find ourselves. It's one or the other. Like, as Spurs fans, we're going to have to deal with the fact that Conte and Kane leave at the same time or similar, you know, within a year of each other. Or they both stay and build a dynasty at Tottenham. And what I'm hoping for. That's the dream. Like, can Daniel Levy find it within his fucking mentality or purse strings or whatever it is that restricts him from being speculative at Spurs? Can he find it so that we can keep Kane and Conte and build the squad around those two and Son? And if he can, and there's no reason why he shouldn't, then fucking boys, it is on.
Did you see the quotes that you were saying about... did you say something about Conte and him saying about staying for years?
And he said Kane as well, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly. And he within that, he said something along the lines of, it's not about a long contract, it's not about money, it's about motivation, really. And it is this project motivating enough to keep him around? And he was like, yes, at the moment it is. And I think a lot of the kind of apprehension he had about when he joined us, I think a lot of that has been answered, and that he is he is happy the way things are going. So as long as we kind of Levy, Paratici, Conte, they all know their roles and they all know they're supposed to do and to keep each other kind of happy, then who knows how long he can stay.
But T, what do you think? There's no reason why it can't. Just that, like, Robbie Keane played one season at every football club and he was one of the hottest properties in Europe. Like, went to Inter Milan, he's at Wolves, Coventry, Leeds. And then he came to Spurs and stayed for the, you know, the vast majority of his career. Why can't that be the same at with Conte? Because we arrive at a situation where there was so much to do before Conte arrived with Pochettino, and you could never, and we should never sort of downplay the impact that Conte had. And I'm not sure that any of us would anyway. But he managed Spurs for a really difficult period and kept us in the conversation. But now the stadium's built. There's the image rights for the stadium coming in. The naming rights coming in for the new stadium. It's primed for a world-class manager to build a legacy at a club. And he's talking about it. He hasn't. It wasn't forced out of him. He was saying many years. I'll be here for many years.
I feel like with Conte, he doesn't say stuff for the sake of saying it. He could have said last season that I'm going to commit to Spurs for years and years. He strikes me as someone who stands on his word. And I think it was Alistair Gold that posted the article where Conte says he'll stay for years and years. And someone replied about him walking out on Inter Milan. Well, Internazionale, not Inter Milan. And but they'd sold Lukaku and... Is it Hakimi?
Yep.
They sold Lukaku and another big player anyway. And Conte said, fuck this. And I feel if we do sell Kane and... Well, I'm not going to sell Kane and Son in one window, but if we sold two players of that calibre, then Conte will say, fuck this. And I feel that Levy has been painted into a corner now where I could understand the economic logic of letting Kane go because he's going to be 30 next year. And we're not going to get this much money for him again. I get that. But he may risk losing Conte by doing it. So I think Conte is probably more valuable because I feel that Conte could win us something without Kane. But I don't think Kane wins anything without Conte because we're not going to get another manager of Conte's calibre at Spurs if Poch comes back and he's learned lessons. I don't see us getting a manager of that quality if Conte leaves.
No, it's Conte or nothing, yeah. And bearing in mind this came from a situation where people when Conte signed for Spurs, they were saying, "Yeah, but he's going to leave at any minute." Like Daniel Levy won't back him. Daniel Levy won't back him. He'll leave. I even had went on the overlap and I had Gary Neville saying to me that Conte, he's not going to be backed by Daniel Levy. This is a fucking Premier League footballer saying, or an ex Premier League footballer saying. Yeah, but he won't be backed. Yeah, but he has been fucking backed. Look where we're at. This is a manager who 6 months ago, everyone was saying, well, he's going to leave. He doesn't want to be there. Now, he's been backed and he's talking about fucking being there for years. People don't like the fact that Conte's at Tottenham. They don't understand it. They can't figure it out. They don't get it. But it's a reality that they have to understand that reality and truth is in front of your face. And Spurs may not have won trophies before. You know, we might be barren in our trophy hunt, but we have a manager who fucking knows how to win.
But look at these players. Look at these players who are now gods. Ben Davies signed a new contract and I thought it was crap and I stand by that, but now he's God. Matt Doherty was a player who I wanted gone. He's transformed these players not by force of personality. And there's other players who he may improve yet more this season. And that's what Pochettino had. Pochettino was the fullback whisperer. Conte could be the wingback whisperer. And again, Zaniolo, if he does sign, it's not a very popular signing by people who, I presume, know their shit. But it doesn't matter because
they know fuck all. I mean, they don't know anything.
We signed Benton Core and Kulusevski, and there's no hype about that. But Conte made it work, and he can make Zaniolo work. He can make anyone work.
Yeah, because probably a man who's won fucking Champions League trophies and has been entrenched in competitive football for years, decades, might look at a person who, or a player who he thinks can improve the first team, or at least add some element to the first team. But you've got some geezer on Twitter going, yeah, well, I've played a lot of Champions League football, and I understand football, and you know, I feel like I can, you know, offer some sort of opinion. Your opinion means fuck all compared to Antonio Conte. If he wants him in, then don't be alarmed if people go, I'm not going to listen to you, I'm going to listen to Conte. Just fucking, whatever Conte wants, and anyone who combats that view, it really doesn't matter what you have to say. Because Conte knows more than you could ever dream to know, because he's been there and done that. And there is a reality about if you've played the game, you know the game much more than if you hadn't. That's my opinion. Anyway, boys, I think we've done a good job there. I think that was a good fucking good book. Good podcast, isn't
it? Yeah.
Good old bloody podcast, isn't it, Ricky?
Thanks,
good old... It's been good. Yeah.
12 years in and we're still making good old bloody podcasts.
I didn't mention this either as well, but hang on a second. Let's see if I can... What I've been doing, look. You see that shoe? I've got my mate's wedding tomorrow.
You're wearing the shoes in?
Wearing the shoes in. So I'm wearing T-shirt, shorts, and I've been wearing wedding shoes all day. My feet are fucking killing now. I'm sitting down.
My feet are hurting. So I'm getting married in about 40 days. And I've bought a pair of boots, and I'm terrified of them. I keep putting them on, walking around the house, going, "I haven't worn these in enough at all." They're lovely boots, but they're going to kill me. I'll wear them to the gym. Rick, I think we need to end on the fact that your daughter broke your finger. Look, hold your finger up for Patreons; they can watch this on. You know, we're videoing it. We're recording this, and yeah. Ricky's little finger is covered up in blue tape. And what, do you need surgery?
They have to wait until it's not. By the way, it's not blue tape; it's an actual like little cast. So
it looks like a blue plaster.
No, yeah, it does look like that, but it's actually not. And I just want to say as well, I fucking heard John send for me on that podcast as well.
Well, last week, yeah.
You fucking wanker! Well, as soon as I see you, I'm going to smash you straight in the stomach.
You're gonna put it on John Bass?
Yeah, I'll fucking put it on him. But I don't care what he's wearing, Stone Island. Probably fucking Jekyll Stone Island as well, mug.
Fuck.
But
his
anyway, mum. I did make the mistake, and you did say like I went to A&E at 2 o'clock and the pod was being recorded 4 hours later at 6 and you said you won't be back in 4 hours time, and I was like, mate, it's 4 fucking hours. Of course, yeah, I'll be back in time. After the first an hour, when I got to A&E, I was queuing outside the door of Milton Keynes General. I was like, I may have underestimated this. I did actually get back at 6:30. It wasn't the fact I couldn't do the podcast because I'd broken my finger. It was the fact that I was still in A&E that I couldn't do the podcast. So shut your fucking face, John. I know you're listening.
Yeah, yeah, but other than that, your 10-year-old daughter broke your finger with a ball.
Yeah, that's right. So we were playing. There's a game. I don't know the name of the game, but if you're throwing a tennis ball about, and you drop the ball, you then you're only allowed to use one hand, and if you drop it again, you've got to stand on one leg and so on and so forth. But we were playing it with a football, and it's fucking easy to catch a football with both hands. So I started throwing it to my daughters with a bit of spite, and I started throwing it up high in the air so that they would drop it, and I'd be like, hey, if I can get on your one leg and all that lot. But then my daughters picked up from me that I was throwing it with a bit of fucking venom in
venom,
there.
Yeah.
So my eldest daughter, who's 10, you're quite right there, Fav, that she threw it to me with a bit of venom. And I just miscaught it, and it jarred my finger. And I was like,
no, you didn't miscatch it. venom, her force that she threw the ball at you as a nearly 40-year-old man. Are you 40?
Yeah. No, I'm 14 December.
All right, you're 14
December. You
should know
that, you prick.
Yeah, mate. Come on, mate. We're blokes. your finger was broken by your 10-year-old daughter.
That's right. You're absolutely correct.
Are you proud or embarrassed?
No, embarrassed. Highly embarrassed. Highly embarrassed. Because even when you're going to see these consultant doctors and stuff like that, they're like, oh, how'd you do it? I was playing ball. And they're like, yeah. Oh, what game are you playing? Like, £10 says it was a basketball. Nah, it's a football.
It's a tennis ball.
All like, oh, right. And yeah, who threw it? Your mate? My 10-year-old daughter did. It's just like, you just feel like such a fucking knob. But yeah, it happened. And afterwards, when it happened, I did swear quite a lot. Carried on playing, and then because I didn't want to alarm my kids either, and then I looked down and I looked at my finger, and it was like bent the other way, swollen, discoloured straight away, and I knew that I'd fucking broken it.
Yeah, it looked pretty bad. I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's a 10-year-old out there that could break my finger, but you know, this is the life that Ricky leads.
Yeah, maybe it's just my milk consumption that doesn't make my bones strong enough. Maybe I don't have enough cheese. Maybe I should eat more pizza.
Would have stopped that ball? Do you know, can I tell you the thing that will stop that ball? NordVPN would have stopped that ball. You can sign up to NordVPN by going to the URL is nordvpn.com/thefightingcock and don't get a broken bone ever again. Boys, this has been wonderful. Go. Spurs are going to win the league. I love you, Flonius, and I love you, Ricky.
Love you all too.
Up the Spurs.
Up the fucking Spurs.
Podcast Network. Sports Social 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 Podcast Network.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, GEICO can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners' or renters' coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and GEICO is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to GEICO.com or contact your local agent today.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
GEICO asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, GEICO can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners' or renters' coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and GEICO is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to GEICO.com or contact your local agent today.
Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network.
Does your insurance agent treat you like family?
Insurance Corporation is programmed to build interpersonal relationships with members of family units. We communicate on a four-name basis with all customer numbers.
Only a human who knows you can create a plan that's right for you. That's why for more than 80 years, Farm Bureau Financial Services has built relationships first and plans second. It's your future. Let's protect it. Talk to a Farm Bureau agent today or visit fbfs.com/protect.
Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network.